eating Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Rudy Obias, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. We are back here on Fat Guys at the Movies with a longtime guest host, Rudy Obias, who has been with us many times in the past. Recently, I think it was earlier this summer, that we had you on the last time when we were talking about... I can't remember what we were talking about. I know you and I talked about Prometheus on a couple things, and we also talked about Cabin in the Woods. We'll talk more about that later. Rudy has been on the show several times, and it's good to have him back. I always enjoy having Rudy on the show with us. He's a good guy. Before we find out more about Rudy, and he gets to tell us where he is and who he is and where he comes from, maybe not where he is. You don't want to come to his house and be like, I want to watch a movie.
Anyways, I'd welcome the guest. I'd welcome the guest into my home to watch a movie.
Of course. You'd have to serve them, tea or, scones. You're not British. Well, I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyways, if you want to get in touch with the show, here is how you get in touch with us. You can send us an email at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We will read some feedback if it's appropriate and interesting. Don't just send us blah, blah, blah. Don't just ramble. We'll read something if it makes sense. You can also leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. We were actually thinking about getting a 800 number, but most people have cell phones and sort of a long distance isn't as big of a deal anymore. If you want to see more of what's going on with the Fat Guys, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and you can see, other things that we've done, some things we've written, and there's a whole group of bonus content. You can get other podcasts and movie reviews, direct movie reviews and DVD hits and that sort of thing. And if you want to follow us on social media, we want to get a couple more people liking our page. Go to facebook.com/FGATM or you can follow me personally on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr, and I'd like to introduce everybody once again back in the magical studio in the sky, Rudy Obias. Yay!
Yes.
How are you doing? Remind everybody where you're from and what you do and how they can get in touch with you.
My name is Rudy Obias. I am a film blogger and film critic here in New York City is where I'm from.
And
I am the movies editor for Shakya.com, and I also write for GiantFreakinRobot.com, and that's a sci-fi blog that I write for. And I also host a podcast called The AutorCast, which can be found at AutorCast.com.
And you also do podcasting for Shakya every now and then, don't you?
Every now and then, we have a podcast called Movie Night where we review the movies coming out of the week. And that could be also you can find that at Shakya.com as well.
Okay, great. Yeah, and Rudy, I actually got to know you a while back because you're a much more esoteric film connoisseur than I am. I'm like G-Force, awesome movie, spy guinea pigs. That works for me. Children's stuff, I love. You tend to be a little more artistic, so it's always nice to have you, and especially for this week because we're going to be talking about later in the show. We're going to be talking about The Master, which is of course P.T. Anderson's latest film that sort of dovetails into Scientology, but it's not about Scientology. It's more about the characters. We'll be talking in this segment about Dread 3D, End of Watch. Both of those you've seen. I haven't had a chance to see because they didn't screen those locally for me. We'll also talk about House at the End of the Street, or Hates, which is the little marketing thing they do, and Trouble with the Curve, which is Clint Eastwood's new movie. But first up, let's talk a little bit about Dread 3D. And in this movie, it's a remake or a reboot of the Judge Dredd character from the comic books, played by Carl Urban, and this time instead of Sylvester Stallone. Good choice, in which Carl Urban puts on the helmet and becomes the dark futuristic cop trying to stop a drug kingpin.
800 million people living in the ruin of the old world. Only one thing fighting for order in the chaos. The men and women of the Hall of Justice.
Peachtree is the manufacturing base for all the slow-mo in Mega City 1.
You know how often we get a judge up in Peachtree?
Well, you got one now.
Law is not the law. I'm the law.
Now, Rudy, did you get a chance to see this one?
Yes, I saw Dread 3D about a week ago. I saw it in 3D, and I highly recommend checking this movie out. If you were a fan, or even if you weren't a fan of the original Judge Dredd movie, I believe it came out in 1995, you should
somewhere
see this one.
Mid-90s,
this one
yeah.
does Judge Dredd justice. No pun intended. This is a fantastically fun movie.
Okay. Is it worth seeing in 3D? I know there's a lot of 3D haters out there. I tend to love 3D. I don't love the ticket price, but I do love 3D. Is it worth checking out with the 3D glasses?
If you're a fan of 3D, you'll probably like the 3D in this movie. I don't think the 3D really lends that much to it. This movie is very colorful, so wearing the 3D glasses kind of makes everything a bit darker, which, you know, for me takes away the enjoyment of the movie. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to see it in 3D, but again, also it wouldn't hurt not to see it in 3D. This is such a fun movie, and any way you see it, you'll definitely get your money's worth.
Was it one thing I noticed when I took my son to go see The Expendables, and when they showed the trailer for Judge Dredd, we had recently watched The Raid, Redemption, the Indonesian action film, and my son says that looks a lot like The Raid, because it is. They're storming a building going after a drug dealer, right?
Yeah, I think the big difference between The Raid and a movie like Dredd is in The Raid, you get the impression that this is happening in this one building and it's an isolated incident. In a movie like Dredd, you get the impression that this is happening in every apartment complex in this city. Like, this is not an isolated incident. This is something that happens every day to these cops. And I really enjoy that aspect of it. It seemed like we follow these cops and we follow them on a bad day, trying to take down these drug dealers in this building.
Okay, cool. Well, what do you say? Fat guy's grade. Sucks, rocks, kind of rocks, kind of sucks. How do you want to grade this one?
This rocks. This definitely rocks.
I have to give it a preemptive suck. They didn't screen it for me in my market. But the next one we're going to talk about is End of Watch, in which two cops are targeted after they steal some money.
I am Police Officer 2, Brian Taylor. This is my partner, Officer Zavala.
I'm in my chonies.
I know, dude. Come on.
I'm in my chonies. No.
Come on, man.
We were basic patrol here in Newton, one of the toughest divisions in the LAPD.
Take pride in what you do, you guys.
Yes, sir.
You know, I see you guys out here being good little company men. It's all fun and games. You get to run and jump and fight and shoot.
I'm down with that.
Watch six.
Now, Rudy, you got to see this one, too. This is a found footage movie, but it's not a horror film.
Yeah, it's a found footage movie. It doesn't really fully commit to the found footage premise that it sets up early on in the beginning of the movie, but I'm kind of middle of the road in this movie. The only reason to see this movie is Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena. I think their relationship and that their dynamic in the movie is fantastic. But I think as the movie comes to its end, it kind of cops out. No pun intended again. It kind of cops out at the end.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the thing with found footage is there is a – we were talking about this before the show started. We talked a little bit about how – you know, horror movies tend to be the most common found footage films, and it works actually to have unknown people in the movies. Even if you look at movies like Chronicle and Project X, which were, I didn't like either of them, but these were both found footage movies that came out this year that were not horror films. They're not another Paranormal Activity, but it helps if you recognize the people. If you look at the character in a movie like in Apollo 18, where you look at that character, you're like, well, that's that guy who's on Alphas on the Sci-Fi Channel. To me, it kind of takes me out. I mean, I'm not an idiot. I know I know it's not real. So it works, actually, with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena?
Their performances are great, actually, but because they are well-known actors, it kind of takes away the idea of found footage that this is supposed to be somewhat a document of real life, because it is a big movie star like Jake Gyllenhaal. It's kind of a little hard to believe the situations that they're in. But outside of that, I mean, I feel the only reason to see a movie like End of Watch is to see Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena together in a movie.
Real quick, fat guy's grade.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. Well, when we get back, we got to go to a break here, but when we get back, we're going to talk about the new horror film, House at the End of the Street, and Clint Eastwood's Trouble with the Curve. And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We are talking more about movies. We actually got quite a bit of films to review this week, so you can always check us out for the latest film reviews and current releases, or movies, and just talk about what we thought about them if they didn't lower themselves to actually screening them for an audience in my local area. But that's why I rely on people like Rudy, who lives in a much bigger city. The biggest city.
The biggest city the biggest, in the universe, New York City.
Biggest city. We I see, mean, there's a on Alpha Centauri, there might be a bigger city, but probably not. Probably not.
But living here, we see everything, and that's what I like about New York.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because I'll get I got this next movie, which we're going to be talking about. I've gotten invites to the screenings. They're in New York and L.A. And I'm like, well, that doesn't do me a bit of good because I'm in the Midwest. So anyways, this next one we're going to talk about is House at the End of the Street. A girl starts a relationship with a boy next door whom the town thinks might have just killed his parents.
Your parents got killed. I'm sorry. I know that people were talking about it.
It's okay. It's all anybody can think around me anyways.
You know, that house is the reason why we can even afford to rent this house.
What exactly happened again?
The daughter, Carrie Ann, killed both her parents.
What happened to Carrie Ann?
She drowned in the dam.
But the rumor is, you can see her in the woods.
What's interesting with this movie, I just kind of want to point this out, this and Judge Dredd, Dredd 3D, these are the two movies that... higher profile films that did not get screened. I mean, End of Watch is kind of middling in terms of profile, but these are the big wide release movies, and they didn't screen either of them, the studios. And I'm in a quandary as to which ones I need to actually go see and prioritize, because Dredd is a to me, Dredd's a bigger movie because it's based on, you know, it's a reboot of a previous Schwarzenegger film, Stallone. It's a big, to me, it seems like a big film, and it's, you know, getting a lot of buzz online. House at the End of the Street seems to just sort of like be zooming in under the radar. The big difference is Jennifer Lawrence is in House at the End of the Street, and she, of course, is extremely high profile now because of Hunger Games. And I have a feeling that this movie is getting a bigger notice, sort of the way Silent House got a bigger notice earlier this year after Elizabeth Olsen got some award consideration for her work in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, that bumped Silent House into higher relevancy, I guess. And I feel it's kind of the same way with House at the End of the Street. This looks like just a generic horror film. It looks like they spoil a lot of stuff in the trailers too.
Yeah, wasn't Silent House kind of a generic horror film as well?
Silent House was a gimmick movie. I mean, Silent House, I don't think Silent House would have gotten a wide release if it hadn't been for Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, and the fact that they dropped it in like January.
Well, but, was that the movie that was like all one take?
Yes. Yeah, and it's based on an Uruguayan film, which it makes some changes. And the Uruguayan film's kind of interesting. I actually watched it to compare the two. But it's very kind of art housey because it is that gimmick. It is, you know, it's very clear that they're doing this. They're really milking the one take for what it was. It felt like it would have been a like direct to video thing if it hadn't had a little bit of, you know, the award bait, you know, news that they could hang their hat on.
It's kind of like the Premium Rush with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It seemed like that movie was made like 2 years ago, but it's only coming out now because of The Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises. Michael Shannon's at a higher profile because he got such buzz last year, and he's coming up as going to be playing Zod in the Superman movie. So they've got those names to it. And I think that's what House at the End of the Street looks like. I mean, it's got. It does look like it's a scary movie, and it's a little odd to be releasing this scary movie in the last couple weeks of September. But you know, they've been doing that lately because everyone wants to get out of the way for movies like Paranormal Activity 4 or 86 or whatever comes out this week. And Sinister, which is coming out, which is another found footage movie. So House at the End of the Street gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. You didn't get a chance to see it, did you?
No. Well, actually, I have an invite for that later in the week, but definitely not in time for us to be doing this radio show.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The next one we've got coming up is Trouble with the Curve, in which Clint Eastwood plays an aging baseball scout whose daughter joins him on a scouting trip that could end or rejuvenate his career.
Gus Loebel's one of the best scouts baseball's ever seen. The guy that signed Dusty Baker, Dale Murphy, Tom Glavine.
Gus Loebel.
Well, what are you fellas staring at? I'm not a pole dancer.
You need to meet with a specialist. How are you going to scout this guy if your eyes aren't right?
I don't need your help. I don't know why you just don't go home.
Because I feel this dysfunctional sense of responsibility to make sure that you're okay.
Draft's in 9 days. I don't want any surprises.
Did you get a chance to see this one yet?
I did not, but I've seen the posters as I'm waiting for the subway here in New York.
You know, here's what's, it's a bit frustrating. Clint Eastwood doing movies is like Cher doing music concerts, because it always seems like she's doing her farewell tour. And Clint Eastwood always seems to be doing the last movie he's going to act in. Because the last time he was in the last movie he was going to act in was Gran Torino, and the last time before that was Million Dollar Baby. So it's,
but did he direct this movie? Or he's just starring in it, right? He didn't direct it or anything?
No, he didn't direct it, and that's good. Actually, this movie's a button pusher. It's pretty formulaic, and especially as you get into the third act, it gets into this very, very contrived things happening. But you know what? It's not about baseball. It's not trying to be... I mean, it is about baseball, but it's not like about baseball the way like Moneyball was about baseball. It's very peripherally about baseball, but it's really about his relationship with his daughter, played by Amy Adams. And it's a father-daughter movie. It reminds me a little bit of The Blind Side, in the sense where it's very formulaic. It's a big button pusher. It's got some decent actors or great actors just doing roles that they're very comfortable doing. But it's really nothing terribly special, but it's a very charming movie in its own right. It gets real weird and dark at one point. I mean, it really kind of takes a dark turn, and I was like, whoa, where do we end up here?
Let me ask you this. Does Clint Eastwood lecture an empty chair sometime in this movie?
Well, and I know a lot of people associated that, because right when you had the chair incident at the Republican National Convention, they're doing this movie about a guy who's getting a little old. He might be getting a little forgetful. He's getting a little bit batty in his old age. And then you change the channel, and suddenly there he is yelling at a chair. So I think that his appearance at the RNC was a big, elaborate stunt to promote this movie. Because they're like, yeah, Trouble with the Chair. But I mean, I liked Trouble with the Curve way more than I probably should have. I was dreading it going in. I'd only seen advertisements for it when I went and saw Hope Springs this past summer. And it was not my kind of movie, but I mean, I thought it was cute enough. I mean, it worked. It did what it wanted to do. And yeah, it's formulaic, but I thought it kind of worked.
So. Yeah, well, you know, a good movie is a good movie, you know, and a bad movie is a bad movie. And that's firmly how I view all movies.
Yeah. And this one, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks, surprisingly. But we have to go to the break. But next, we're going to be talking about The Master and the box office and our Fat Guy 5.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And here we are at Fat Guys in the Movie. Still, we are talking about some of the new movies for the week, and we talked about The House at the End of the Street. We talked about Dredd. I keep saying Judge Dredd, but it's
just
Dredd 3D.
It's just Dredd.
It's just Dredd. It dropped the formalities. We also talked about Trouble with the Curve and End of Watch. The other one this has already opened in several theaters and in several cities, is doing extremely well in limited release, is The Master. And this is, of course, P.T. Anderson's latest film. He's out there touring with a 70mm print. So we were actually talking over the break that, I mean, it looks fantastic in 70mm. I didn't get to see it in 70mm, but I did get to see it. And anyways, The Master is what we're going to talk about now, in which Joaquin Phoenix plays an erratic and troubled man who finds solace in the charismatic leader of a cult.
Man is not an animal. We
are not a part of the animal kingdom. We sit far above that crowd.
You must understand.
I have unlocked and discovered a secret to living in these bodies that we hold.
Good science allows for more than one opinion. Otherwise, you merely have the will of one man, which is the basis of a cult.
The only way to defend ourselves is to attack.
Now, I know you're a huge fan. You're a big fan of P.T. Anderson, aren't you?
Yes, he's actually my favorite. One of my favorite living American filmmakers working today, him and Terrence Malick and Martin Scorsese would be my top three.
He's got to be living American, still working today.
Yes.
So I had said to you before the show when we were talking, you know, before we started, that I kind of put P.T. Anderson and Paul W.S. Anderson, because we talked about both of them last week when Mel Valentin was on the show. I said they both kind of had this same weird career trajectory, which for me, I think they kind of peaked early and they kind of went totally different direction and make totally different movies. But P.T. Anderson, his movies have gotten extremely art house, and he was never a hugely mainstream director. But movies like Sydney and Boogie Nights and Magnolia were very accessible, less to Magnolia, but they were accessible to mainstream. They told a very standard story. The Master shows him really kind of delving into the art house, the love for the art house cinema, and I know you're a big art house fan. So let's hear what you have to say about
The Master. A movie like Boogie Nights and Sydney or Heart Eight, there's a lot of commercial fare to it. They're very commercially acceptable. A movie like The Master, I can understand people not liking this movie, but I can see people who are fans of Paul Thomas Anderson and fans of art house films absolutely falling in love with it. I mean, as it stands right now, my number one movie of the year is The Master. My number two movie of the year is The Avengers. Joss Whedon's The Avengers. So if that tells you anything about my sensibility, I can go from The Master to The Avengers in one swift. I think The Master is an absolutely brilliant film. I mean, it's definitely not for everyone, but it shows Paul Thomas Anderson. He's a true artist. Shows that cinema, movies could be something more than just entertainment, that it could actually be a piece of art, something that could be examined and discussed. And a movie like The Master is not going to give you the clear-cut answers, is not going to give you clear-cut character motivations, but it's going to give you something interesting to talk about. And it's a true vision. And it feels like at this point in Paul Thomas Anderson's career, his movies are kind of like event movies. He comes out with a movie like once every 5 years, and it seems like it's an event. Everyone's lining up to see it.
Yeah. Well, and definitely, I'll be curious to see what happens as this expands, because with it being sort of that he's a darling of the art house crowd, restricting it to the very limited screenings, you're going to get these 100,000, 200,000 a screen weekend grosses, which is what he's been doing. I'll be curious to see what happens when it expands. I have a feeling it'll deflate to a degree, simply because you're right. It's not a mainstream movie. It's not an accessible film to all of America or all of the world. But it is. I felt that it was more digestible than I thought, because I was hearing people talk about it going, oh, it's so out there and erratic and, you know, here and there. And I'm like, well, I mean, it is, but it's not about, because everyone's like, oh, it's about Scientology. It's not really about Scientology. I mean, it's an allegory to it, because it's not actually telling a specific story about it, it being a cult. It's a love story is what it is. It's a love story between Joaquin Phoenix's character and the leader of the cult, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Then that's really what it is. If you watch it and break it down that way, it's these two very disparate personalities finding each other and finding each of the other kind of fill a void in the other, and they latch on to each other. But like any sort of, you know, it's sort of like the bad love story where there's stuff that happens and the people close to you don't like the person you're dating, and in that sense they have all this conflict, and their views are different, and their motivations are different, and their agendas are different. And it's more about the performance than it is about the story, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it feels Paul Thomas Anderson isn't, plainly, he's not interested in narrative. He's more interested in exploring character and themes. And Joaquin Phoenix as Freddie Quell, I believe the name of the character is absolutely fantastic. Philip Seymour Hoffman as Lancaster Dodd is fantastic. And you're right, Kevin. It's a story about these two men that fill a void in each other's lives. With Lancaster Dodd, he needs someone like Joaquin Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix's character, to kind of validate his religion, to validate what his the cause is all about. And for Freddie Quell, he needs someone like Lancaster Dodd, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, to, I guess, show him the proper way. He's kind of a drifter, and he needs some sort of a direction, and he's finding direction with Lancaster Dodd, this charismatic cult leader. This movie's just endlessly interesting, and I love movies like this. Don't come out all the time, and when they do come out, I perk up, and I'm really attracted to them, because, again, this is an example showing that movies could be something more than entertainment. It can give you a piece of life, and it could inform you of how you are and how you present yourself to the world. And I think that's it's a good thing to celebrate.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't love it. I liked it. And this is, I said actually on Twitter, I go, well, this is the time of year where I see the movie everybody's gushing over, and I'm like, that was okay. That's like that was my reaction to, like, you know, like the King's Speech. I'm like, ah, it was okay. It was well done. It was a good movie. Like, artist, yeah. Same thing. Ah, it was fine.
I mean, this movie isn't made to make millions at the box office. It's made to win awards. I mean, this is Oscar bait, but it's the good sense of quote unquote Oscar bait. Yeah. This movie is going to get nominated for a number of Academy Awards. I don't know if it's going to win Best Picture, but I think it will definitely be nominated and be in that conversation.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. We got to move on. Oh, first of all, Fat Guy Great, I'm assuming you're giving it a total rocks.
Completely rocks.
Completely rocks. I give it a kind of rocks. I mean, it is good. I mean, P.T. Anderson's films, his last couple films, I've enjoyed, but I haven't gone gaga over him. But I don't go gaga over. I love Boogie Nights, and to me, that's his pinnacle because of what it did. But his movies are all about the acting and the characters, much more than it is about the story, especially now. But let's talk real quick about the box office. Of course, last weekend, the other Paul Anderson film, Resident Evil Retribution, that took the box office with $21 million, and then you had Finding Nemo, the 3D re-release, at just under $17 million, which was on the low end of these re-releases. But you know what? I think it's sort of they're milking it a little too much quickly. And then you had everything else, pretty much the lineup from the previous week. With nothing else. And the Oogie Loves, just to let you know, in case you were wondering where the Oogie Loves fall, I don't even see them on the list. So Oogie Loves, I think, have disappeared from everywhere anyways.
I don't see it here on the list.
Real quick, about 20 seconds. What do you think is going to win this weekend? I would put my money on House at the End of the Street.
Or I'm going to... I would like to say Dread, but I would not... If House at the End of the Street wins, I wouldn't be too upset.
Yeah, I think that might be where it's going. I think it's going to be a relatively low box office because there's so many films out there right now. When we get back from the break, we got to take a break now. We're going to be wrapping up the show in the next break, and you can listen to us talk about DVDs, the DVDs that are coming up. And if we have time, we may squeeze in this Fat Guy 5 that we didn't do this time. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. We have finally gotten through all the reviews that we were supposed to be doing. You know, we talked about The Master, we talked about End of Watch, we talked about Dread, we talked about House at the End of the Street, we talked about The Trouble with the Curve. We'd also talked about box office. Interesting box office thing. I did look up while we were on the break because I am that level of a professional. A couple things to note. The Oogie Loves did make the box office. I missed it, but it came in 91st in the box office in its third week. It was in 8 theaters and it made $2,705. You can't even buy a car with what the Oogie Loves made in its third week at the movie theater. It did, however, break $1 million. It's so far made $1.064 million. Ironically, The Master, which we talked about, was in fewer screens. Was in 5 screens, And The Master made last weekend $736,000. So it like made, you know, a little bit more than 300 times as much as the Oogie Loves did.
Well, I haven't seen the Oogie Loves movie, but I'm sure The Master is 20 times more the quality of that movie as well.
I have to say, I've seen The Master, and it's a long movie. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. I would rather sit through The Master five times than probably watch the Oogie Loves. Anyways, there's a little bit of a box office tidbit for you. The other thing to note, we did talk about the latest Resident Evil movie. It made almost a $50 million debut, which is more than the last Resident Evil movie did overseas. So it's on track to maybe even break the $236 million overseas that the last one made, which means we are definitely going to get another Resident Evil. It'll be Resident Evil 6, whatever it'll be called. I think it'll be called Resident Evil whatever.
It would be Resident Evil Totalitarian or something like that.
Resident Evil Redundancies. And then they'll have that. So, but right now, what do we got coming up next? You know what's coming up next, don't you?
We got the world famous DVD Roundup.
There you go. That's right. Yeehaw. And you know what's interesting? I'll throw this out there. I had that, you hear that whipping sound. It's appropriate to talk about that because the Indiana Jones saga, The Complete Adventures, is on Blu-ray. You can get all four movies on Blu-ray. Yeah, and I am a huge fan of Indiana Jones. I love all four movies. I even defend The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Thank you very much. It's not the best, but it still was fun. I did enjoy that. But that's out. You had a couple you wanted to point out for DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah, actually, one of my favorite movies of the year so far, Drew Goddard's The Cabin in the Woods is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, which is a fantastic horror film.
It's a great deconstruction of horror movies. And we actually, there, if you go to filmschoolrejects.com, you can find, you know, search the tag Cabin in the Woods, and you will find my drinking game on that. You can then play that with your friends and family as long as you're over 21. And see if you can stay awake if you don't pass out by the end of the movie. But I loved Cabin in the Woods. I'm not a big Joss Whedon fan, and he was involved in it, and he was also directed The Avengers, and those are two of my favorite movies of 2012. So,
you're coming around to Joss Whedon. I can feel it.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with when Midsummer Night's Dream goes wide. But there's another one you wanted to point out here. You had another DVD or Blu-ray you wanted to point out. The best exotic.
Oh yeah, the best exotic Marigold Gold Hotel.
Good thing you wrote that one down.
it's a movie my parents will love, and I actually liked the movie. I didn't think it was a terrible film. I didn't think it was a great film, but mark my words, I think this movie will be nominated for Best Picture come the end of the year.
You really think it's going to be Best Picture? Or
yes.
Or will be nominated for Best Picture?
It will be nominated for Best Picture. I doubt it will win, but it will definitely be nominated, or at least in the conversation of Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Fox Searchlight. It kind of falls into that category. And they've got a couple things. I could see them try and push. But see, stuff like, you know, like Lola Versus, they're not going to be pushing
no.
Or anything like that. So I could see, you know, come November getting a screener for this or a couple screeners from the Crib.
I mean, it's right there in the wheelhouse, and every year there's always the movie that has like the great display of acting, and yeah. All the actors in this movie are pretty terrific, and it's a great display of what they could do in the craft. And
well,
it wouldn't be so far out of the imagination to see a movie like The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel be nominated for Best Picture.
It would be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised. I could see that happening. I think you're going to see more supporting cast nominees because you're right. The cast is great. I mean, Judi Dench, Bill Nighy, and Maggie Smith, you know, McGonagall from the Harry Potter movies. And, who's the other guy? The guy from Michael Clayton, Tom Wilkinson. I mean, they got some great performances in there. It's a great companion piece to watch Hope Springs with. I think it's a total old people movie. I had the most awkward experience, though, with this movie. I was at an Indian restaurant, There's an Indian restaurant near my house, and it's around the corner. And I go there all the time. I have this little lunch buffet. It's a tiny little Indian restaurant, but the lunch buffet is good, and it's very economical. So I'm sitting there eating, and there are these two old people. And sometimes old people can be incredibly racist, even if they don't mean to be. And so and you got to remember, it's an Indian restaurant. And so they're talking about Indian movies, but they're not talking about like real Indian movies. They're talking about the movies like The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel and Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire, yeah.
Yeah, those are the two they're talking about. And then what's hilarious is the woman who's one of the hostesses or one of the women who is the servers who has the water and she pours it. They ask, oh, have you seen The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel? And I'm like, are you kidding me? This woman works at this restaurant 24/7. And she's always here. She doesn't watch movies. She runs a restaurant. And you're saying it like you're like, oh, you're Indian. I'm sure you've seen this movie. Because people who look like you are in it. I mean, I was just shaking my head. I was so expecting like, you know, an African-American person to walk by them and go, have you seen the latest Tyler Perry movie? Or something like that. I mean, I tweeted out afterwards. I was tweeting about the story and I'm like, I apologize to anybody from India or anyone of Indian descent for these people who were sitting next to me, near me in this restaurant.
Yeah, you should apologize to like all of humanity for the actions of those people.
Anyone with any pigmentation in your skin, I apologize for these people. No, but anyways, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. I'm sure all the Indians have seen it. Because it's not about Indians. That's the other thing. It's about British people. And it is the quintessential it's the quintessential British colonist movie.
Yeah.
Where it's about these rich British people who go to India and are like, oh, is it let me have a coming of age. And there's Indians in it, but they're kind of like in the background.
Yeah, they're not the stars of the film. They're definitely the supporting cast.
And the one Indian who is a Brit, Dev Patel. Might as well put like Cal Penn in there and be like, hey, they got Indians in it. He's from Jersey, but you know. Some other DVDs to point out. You know, we're gonna have to skip the Fat Guy 5. We'll have to do this one another day. That's okay. It wasn't a very good one, so hush hush. Don't tell anybody. But we got some other DVDs to point out. Katy Perry, a part of me. I know you're a big fan with the bubblegum outfits and everything. You go to her concerts, don't you?
Oh yeah. from what I heard this was actually quite a good movie.
I heard. Well, you know, these sort of like profile concert movies aren't they're they're puff pieces. They're fluff pieces. They're supposed to make the star look good. And so, yeah, Katy Perry, a part of her. There's parts of her I want to see, but not that movie. There's Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3 is out. I'm sure you can add that to your collection.
Oh, and now the trilogy is complete. You know, what they set up in the first two movies can finally come to fruition here in Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3.
Chihuahua Rising. I'm sure those old people in that Indian restaurant are probably asking every Mexican they can if they've seen Beverly Hills Chihuahua 3. There's also Ed Wood has hit Blu-ray, which is probably one of the best Tim Burton movies ever made. Halloween 2 and 3 have hit Blu-ray. They've been before, but now they actually have Mustafa, what's his last name, Mustafa Assad, his information on there. So you can catch those, you know, of course you got Tom Atkins in Halloween 3 and I can't go wrong with that. Modern Family season 3, great show on ABC, definitely worth checking out. Supernatural season 7, that's kind of cool. The Mentalist season 4, Hawaii 50 season 2, Body of Proof season 2, Suburgatory season 1. Judge Dredd, the original Judge Dredd is out on Blu-ray, that's the stinker of the week. Well, you know, this it. We talked about Dredd 3D, we talked about End of Watch, House at the End of the Street, The Trouble with the Curve and The Master. Next week we're going to be talking about Hotel Transylvania, Looper, and Won't Back Down. Rudy, as we go out, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm always glad to have you here. And with that, we're going to have to say goodbye and listen to Fat Guys at the Movies every week.
Like the show you just heard? Then head on over to FatGuysAtTheMovies.com to hear more. Fat Guys Network flagship show, Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Oh Snap with Kevin and Meryl. Celluloid Spotlight with Meryl and Hash, plus many more. And if you like any of what you hear, kick us a few bucks using the donation button on the sidebar. Or just leave us an iTunes review. Fat Guys Network is where the ooey-gooey podcasting goodness is at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.